Hey, my name is Lindsay Anderson.
And I'm Ellen Flannery Schroeder.
And you're listening to The Great Estate, a podcast about parenting.
We've got 6 kids and 2 PhDs in psychology between us, so we mostly know what we're doing.
Yeah, but not all the time. When our children throw us a curveball, we fall back on some basic parenting principles that are known to promote healthy and happy kids.
So that's what we're going to talk about today. Strategies for navigating difficult moments and keeping a sense of humor about ourselves.
And our kids.
Okay.
We're coping our way through it. We're talking about resilience and coping today and reflecting on my recent sickness and how we are coping our way through the daily activities despite what feels like an enormous hardship.
Yeah, because you can't always stay home.
No. You know, we have that rule in our house about blood and bones. Unless there's blood and bones involved and I can see one or both of those things, then how do we manage the situation? And that oftentimes is the start of the discussion around coping and resilience in our house.
I always called it bodily fluids. I never thought of the bones.
Blood and bones, yeah. Well, we've had a recent bone incident in our house that involved a trip to the ER and stitches, and that was an important
and that required
blood and
coping.
Bone.
That required coping
on
both
everybody's part.
Yeah.
No, there were a lot of that was a stressful moment, but
I'll tell you one of the things that I notice the most when I'm working with parents and talking about coping, in particular child coping, and this might have been true in your case with your daughter's injury, but I find that parents are frequently underestimating their child's ability to cope.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I mean, there's no longer answer to that other than yes. I think that is absolutely true, that we sort of swoop in and I think our own anxiety gets going and we're concerned about how they're going to decompensate.
Like, how do we get parents to believe in the resilience of their children?
It's an important question, especially given the penchant that parents have to assume that their children are incapable of coping, because that also communicates to children, oh, I can't cope with this. If my mom doesn't think I can cope with this, then I probably can't cope with this, and then I need to be asking for help or seeking support. And on one level, yes, we want to encourage children to seek support when they need it. But on another hand, we don't allow children an opportunity to realize how incredibly resilient they are or can be if we are constantly assuming that they can't do things.
So what I hear you saying is that we need to allow parents need to put kids in difficult situations.
Yes.
To allow them to practice their coping. And they might not be great at first, but across time they'll develop those skills.
Yeah. I mean, you just said 2 really critically important things, I think. One is that coping and resilience takes time. You know, that is a skill that children develop over time. And I think for both parents and children, and this is point number 2, it requires some exposure.
Yeah.
You know, being exposed to difficult challenges and having to realize that children can, in fact, come out the other side, not just as good as they were to begin with, but in fact, better for having gone through the difficult experience and learned from it. So they're not just coming back to baseline, they're coming back sort of supercharged.
Anti-fragility. So I was just doing some reading. You set me up so well for this.
You're welcome.
I was just doing some reading about coping and resilience, no surprise there. And one of the terms that was introduced was this notion of anti-fragility. So the idea is that when you stress something, after the stressor is over, it comes back, but not to start. It comes back better, stronger. So if you think of muscles, so when we exercise, we're stressing that muscle, we're breaking it down, and then it, you know, knits back together stronger. That's how we improve our muscle strength with exercise. Or if you think of vaccinations. They're sort of stressing the immune system. And so the body's natural immune response is strengthened so that it's able to fight off the various viruses that impinge upon it in the future. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's a really interesting concept to apply to kids, mm-hmm. to allow them to be in stressful situations with the expectation that they're going to learn something. So as we said before, they're going to practice coping, but also that they're going to emerge from that situation stronger than before.
Mm-hmm. I think that there's something really interesting that happens kind of naturally for parents, especially parents who have multiple children. So for example, my third born, I am far less likely to swoop in and assume that she can't handle things or assume that something is going to be a problem and let her sort of look up and respond, you know, in a way that is strength-based and encouraging and reinforcing of resilience than I was, for example, with my firstborn when I was heavily anxious and really sort of worried about how do I be a parent and how do I help her and how do I minimize stress on her without sort of appreciating at that point in my own development, how important some degree of stress and grit are for kids.
I have an example.
Great.
So not too long ago, I was talking with my mom on the phone, and when I talk to my mom, I will often put her on speaker because the kids are in the room, my husband's in the room, everybody sort of gets filled in at once, and I don't have to repeat the conversation. And in the course of that conversation, she let me know that she received a callback on her mammogram. And at that point, it was only my daughter in the room, and I was trying to decide, should I turn off the speaker? Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I decided not to because I knew that the probability of there being something negative growing out of a mammogram callback was low, that there was a high rate of false positives on those callbacks for good reason. And I was very intentional about not turning it off after I'd put some thought into it, because I wanted my daughter to see the process of being a little bit scared, you know, mm-hmm. having my, being a little bit stressed, mm-hmm. but holding it together, mm-hmm. and I knew that I was going to be modeling some kind of coping, so mm-hmm. I was very aware of that, mm-hmm. that I was going to keep my cool and keep a really positive attitude, and made statements like, I'm not going to worry till I have a reason to worry. And in fact, everything was fine, mm-hmm. and in the end, I was grateful that my daughter was able to sort of see that through and have a model for how to hear about bad news, how to stay cool, how to keep on keeping on, mm-hmm. because you have to do that in the face of adversity, mm-hmm. and you have to do that in the face of sickness, mm-hmm. like today.
Coping with uncertainty is one of those really continuous opportunities that we have to model for our children. Coping doesn't have to be just about sort of big adversity or physical challenges that's not the only type of coping and resilience that we're talking about, but even coping in the face of these uncertainties or coping in the face of unexpected events or changes in routine. I mean, those are day-to-day opportunities to do exactly what you're talking about, which is model that it's okay and there is a network of people around you to support you, and that we can find a solution to what's going on.
Right. To me, it's distress tolerance. Mm-hmm. It's really helping kids to develop an ability to handle and manage distress.
Mm-hmm. And uncertainty. You know, distress sounds like something that is sort of big and easy to identify. Uncertainty, I think, a lot of the times can be less apparent,
right?
And equally problematic, especially for younger kids. Although maybe not. I mean, maybe the example with your mother's mammogram is a great example of all of these uncertainties that we even as adults are having to cope with and manage in a way that sets the tone for our children. In this past week, my schedule has gone super haywire. And that even has presented some uncertainty and some changes that my children, being young, have had to figure out how to cope with and how to manage when things look different. You know, here are all of the good things that come out of the fact that it's not just going to be the routine as usual. Like, I don't just have to have, you know, broccoli and this for dinner, which is what mom always gives me, but I get this great other stuff that I know that dad is going to treat me to, or that another caregiver is going to treat me to. That there are ways to sort of embrace
change.
Yeah.
So I really like what you said about sort of rethinking what it means to be home with dad versus being home with mom. No offense. I don't mean that to be offensive.
No.
I mean that to say I love that you're talking about reframing the situation, because mm-hmm. I think that's an incredibly key coping skill.
Mm-hmm.
So the ability to look at any life situation,
mm-hmm.
Especially the hard ones, and being able to find another way of looking at it that is that's easier to tolerate, that's not always positive, but easier to manage.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the key elements of coping and resilience involves having positive role models and a support network around you, so that when you are faced with these types of hardships or distresses or uncertainties, that you can lean on people, and that you have people around you who see your ability to engage in these types of coping behaviors. So somebody who's going to be encouraging and who's going to let you struggle, but not to the point of becoming completely unraveled. You know, I wrote on my little list of notes about coping and resilience the importance of having multiple identities. And I didn't mean that in terms of like Clark Kent and Superman, but I did mean it in the sense of, you know, recognizing that there are strengths in each one of us. When I'm struggling in my professional life, I can fall back on the fact that I have meaningful relationships in other parts of my life and meaningful activities that I like to do outside of school, and that I am more than just a professor or a psychologist or a mother, but that there are all of these different elements of my identity that I can draw on when I am faced with a problem or some type of concern.
I think that's a great point. I'm trying to think of how do we build that in kids who have fewer identities, I think. They're children,
mm-hmm.
Students, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But what are the ways that we sort of let them have problems in one area but seek solace in the fact that some other area is going well?
Mm-hmm. Or how to draw the strength from those other areas in. So my 4-year-old, you know, when she's had a bad day at school, or which I have learned actually are very rarely bad days when I get more information, but from her vantage point, you know, one person didn't want to play with her or made some allusion to not wanting to play with her, which may or may not have actually come to pass, but she has come home and sort of clung on to this slight and saying, you know, that does sound like that was a really hard thing. I wonder if it would be helpful to talk with your sister about it, or would it be helpful to draw a picture about it? You know, draw me a picture of what that felt like, or draw me a picture about how you would have liked the day to go, because she likes to draw. So sort of calling in all of these other strengths that she has, all of these other meaningful relationships to help her sort of buffer against, you know, that,
right.
That's a sort of small example, but buffer against that.
You're also bringing up something that I think is really important, and that's sort of the recovery, teaching kids that during times of stress or problems, that the problem does always resolve. After winter comes spring each and every time. The ship is always righted. I think that that's a really important message. Times can be troubled, but things smooth out across time. So there's not a lot of worry about, oh no, what are we going to do with this problem? Because I have an awareness that I'll be able to work through it, and I'll be able to get to the other side of the problem.
So what did we cover? We talked about 4 main principles related to coping and resilience.
Number one, coping and resilience are learned over time. With some practice and coaching, children improve the skills and strategies that will work best for them.
Number two, during stressful times, be aware that you're modeling coping and resilience for your children. Resist the urge to shield them from all negative news. Demonstrate your confidence in their ability to cope. Number three, reframe situations in ways that are realistic and adaptive. There are always ways to re-envision situations or retell old stories in ways that highlight individual strengths.
And number four, make sure your child is aware of their strengths so that during stressful experiences, they can draw from all parts of their lives and their important relationships.
I'm Lindsay Anderson.
And I'm Ellen Flannery Schroeder.
And you just listened to a Greatest Eight podcast written and produced by Drs. Lindsay Anderson and Ellen Flannery Schroeder. Associate producer and engineer was Ian Reyes.
For more information related to parenting for mental health or to listen to podcasts on other topics, please visit thegreatest8.org.
That's thegreatest8.org. These podcasts were developed by the University of Rhode Island and South County Health with support from URI, the Rhode Island Foundation, and the Van Buren Charitable Foundation.